the Truth Express with your conductor, Erskine, who give you the latest on national news, politics, policies, business, and government issues.
This is Erskine. I'd like to thank all of our affiliates, all the way from Alaska to Puerto Rico to Lexington, Kentucky, all over the country, and the listeners around the world via the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being part of our family. This is going to be a real pleasure because I have never, I thought I knew Ken Timmerman. I didn't. I started out the introduction. Ken Timmerman is an internationally acclaimed investigative journalist and war correspondent, nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for exposing Iran's nuclear weapons program. That's only part of what Ken Timmerman is. His life story is just incredible. His book, St. Peter's Bones, bears witness to the persecutions of Christians in Iraq. He covered both sides of the Arab-Israeli conflict for over 30 years, including in 1982, taken hostage by the West Beirut Palestinian guerrilla fighters when he became born again into the Christian faith. His book, Dark Forces, The Truth About What Happened in Benghazi, Deception, the making of the YouTube video Hillary and Obama blamed for Benghazi, ISIS Begins, the election heist, and now, and the rest is history, tales of hostages, arms dealers, dirty tricks, and spies. Ken was all of that. He was a hostage. He was an arms dealer. He did dirty tricks, and he was a spy. He did all of that. Nobody knows international affairs better than Ken Timmerman. He was at the start of all of those. His website is kentimmerman.com. The rest is history. This is incredible, incredible book. And I'm sure that it was quite interesting writing this journals. I would call it Journals of a True Investigative Reporter. I think that's exactly what it is. Now, we are watching the same thing happen. And Ken, you were the person who was there when the media died. An expose on Bill Clinton by a Time reporter buried in July 1994 marked the end of mainstream media. And you were the one who they buried the story. Couldn't have that out. Now, if you look at the news, they've got two stories. They've got the Mar-a-Lago, and they've also got the abortion issue. They've taken away the fact that we have the inflation. They've taken away the fact of what's been going on worldwide. They've taken away all the important stories, and it's all come down to the headline, Mar-a-Lago and abortion. This is what they do. The mainstream media has changed the entire narrative of the election. Are we the people falling for it? Yes, we are. That's what we're being fed. You've seen that. You've seen it throughout your history, haven't you, Ken?
I have seen that, and thank you for that great introduction, Erskine.
Oh,
I've got to just make one.
Yeah, go for
I've got to make just one quick comment. Is that the dirty tricks in my subtitle? I didn't play the dirty tricks; they were the dirty tricks played on me.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was engaged in investigating the deep state before we ever used that term in France, in particular, and then later on in the United States. And you referred to what happened under Clinton with investigating communist China. That was really the convergence of the deep state and the end of mainstream journalism. I think today what we have is a partisan press,
right.
Most of it working as arms of the communications directorate of the Democrat National Committee.
Absolutely. That's why they're changing the narrative. Now, in 1983... you were working as a stringer for Dutch radio. It was your first time, and you were held prisoner, matter of fact, for 25 days by the Palestinians in West Beirut. You said, as a matter of fact, all the people in West Beirut were prisoners. Tell a little bit about that. And I really want you to tell me, you'd worked for 18 years in Paris, and... because you were fluent in French, so that helped you a lot. I'm reading it, and I'm reading it unbelievably. The place you were held was like eight stories down, as the concrete started falling like pancakes. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes, it was eight stories when I was taken hostage, and in July of 82. And when I got out 3.5 weeks later, it was 1.5 stories and pancakes. And during all that time, we could hear the building collapsing over our heads. The concrete itself was being shattered and turned into dust. It was sort of rained down on us like rain on a pane of glass. We could hear that above our heads, and we were trying to find the safest place in this underground cellar and praying all the time.
That made you a very strong Christian. You figured the only way you were going to get out of there was through the power of prayer, and it worked. You had to be thankful. Right.
It was. I was quite literally delivered by angels, and there's no other way of explaining it. I had been there for 3.5 weeks. The so-called adults had left this underground prison with other hostages. They were taking people out day after day and shooting them in the alleys outside. And at the end, there were 13-year-old boys with Kalashnikovs. And there is little more frightening in this world, Erskine, than kids with automatic weapons who have no moral compass and no adult supervision.
I love what you said, kid. I got to say this. I love what you said. I don't want to interrupt you. What's more scary, more dangerous, a gorgeous Swedish woman with a Glock 19 or a Palestinian teenager with an AK-47? You say the teenager with the AK-47 is really bad, but you know, a gorgeous Swedish woman with a Glock 19 ain't nothing to mess with, right?
Well, that's right. I know that very personally as well because I married one, and she's a pretty good shot. And I wouldn't like to get on the other side of her Glock 19, but boy, those 13-year-old kids with the AK-47s, there was no rationality. There was no reliability. There was no
consciousness, no compassion or anything with the kid.
But
no
consequence either. They were taking people out and shooting them, and nobody cared. Nobody cared. So when an adult came into that underground prison and said, "Are there any Frenchmen here?" I sort of flipped the coin in my head and said, "You know, heads, I stay here and I die. Tails, they take us out and shoot us. But at least if they take us out and shoot us, because the Frenchmen were wanted by the Palestinians for capital crimes, at least we get shot out in the light." So I said, "Yeah, I'm a Frenchman. Please take me. I'm here." And I went out, and ultimately it was kind of like Peter, if you remember in the book of Acts early on, I think it's Acts chapter 3, where Peter is walked out of that prison at night by an angel, and he appears to the apostles. He arrives at their house at the apostles, and they don't recognize him at first. They can't believe that it's him at the door, and he has just been walked to their door in the darkness and deposited there on the doorstep, delivered.
Delivered you from sheer absolute death and walked you right out. That's incredible.
Delivered me from evil. Yes.
You were embedded with the left wing pro-Palestinians in West Beirut and immediately taken hostage. There was no compassion, no talking to them or anything else. Now, you also founded the Foundation for Democracy in Iran. But when you're 18 years in Paris, you are investigating weapons of mass destruction for a congressional committee in 1994, and you got fired because you discovered that the U.S. transferred advanced aircraft manufacturing technology vis-a-vis the Clinton White House to China. This was a huge story, huge story. They never let you publish it anywhere, did they? They just shut it completely down.
It was an enormous story, and I had it all scheduled, written and scheduled and in the book in Time magazine in July of 1994. And the Friday before the release of the story, would have been released on the Sunday, on that Friday, they pulled it at noon and fired me at 2 p.m., saying that I had pissed off the administration with my questions. And I turned to my editor and I said, "Wait a second, I thought it was... that's what I was supposed to do as a reporter. I was supposed to ask questions that didn't necessarily please those people in power." He said, no, "You pissed off our administration." And that's when I got it. That's when I understood that these organizations, I'd worked for Time before that, for Newsweek, for ABC News, for CBS News. I worked for the New York Times. And I understood at that point that they had all become shills for the Democrat Party, in particular, the at this point, the Clinton administration. It was shocking and stunning and overwhelming.
So now you really understand why nothing happened to Hillary Clinton. You also understand why nothing's happening about Hunter Biden. The whole media has formed a shield around to protect these people, hasn't it?
They have. And what's even more shocking is the fact of the deep state protection that the Democrats have been receiving. Hunter Biden, we've learned just in these past few days, was protected by the FBI. The FBI agent in charge of his investigation shut it down and shut it down, giving no reason, which, by the way, he's required to do under FBI regulations. He gave no reason for shutting it down. The FBI also warned Facebook, and they probably warned Twitter. But Facebook, we know because Mark Zuckerberg has told Joe Rogan this on a podcast, that the FBI came to him and said, this is all Russian disinformation. Watch out. Absolutely unbelievable. I saw that early on with Communist China in 94, and I do talk about that in the book, in preparing for that story on the selling out of aircraft manufacturing technology, which, by the way, today has given the Chinese the capability to manufacture those fifth-generation aircraft. They wouldn't be able to do it without the stuff that Clinton sold them in 94, 95, 96. But I went out to the CIA ahead of time to get their take on it. And we were given such a whitewash, it was unbelievable. It was hard to believe the garbage we were being told by the CIA analysts there who were looking at Chinese military technology. They say, well, the Chinese, they've got a third world army. Their military technology is awful. This isn't going to do them any good. There are a dozen other countries around the world who have the same kind of stuff. This was manufacturing gear from the B-1 bomber plant in 1994, the top of the top that we had in our country. Nobody else had that kind of technology.
Right. Giving it to them.
Now, and the CIA.
I want to go back to your date when you were held hostage. You actually saw Yasser Arafat, and the name, I'm looking at this, I'm going, with a lady named Natasha was walking by you. I mean, this sounds like Boris Badenov and Natasha. I mean, you're looking at this, you're going, it couldn't be named Natasha. But you saw him walking by and everything. And then the weirdest part about this was two F-14 Tomcats from the USS Ticonderoga simultaneous bombings. They were learning how to do that simultaneous bombing, same thing they used at the World Trade Center, simultaneous bombings. And it was a building which you had been at 2 hours before, totally leveled. You were once again saved by an angel by getting out of that building before it was bombed. 2 hours would have made the difference, wouldn't it?
It was 2 hours. And we saw Arafat the night before at midnight or something like that. We were able to peer through a duct up above, an air conditioning duct in this furnace room where we had been taken to. And we saw him walking. Now, I call her a Natasha. It's kind of a nickname. But anyway, I saw the Natasha walking with him. It was an arms depot, and it was blown up by the Israelis the next day, 2 hours after we left.
Wow. We'll be back. The Biden administration is quickly moving to implement the liberal fantasy of socialist spending. After spending a $2.1 trillion stimulus, the president and Democratic-led Congress have introduced another $3 trillion plan to add to our insurmountable debt, seeking to raise taxes on Americans making as little as $200,000 a year. Have you seen the immigration footage? 87 million putting illegals in hotel rooms and our troops sleeping on parking garage floors. Could this be the biggest single gold buying opportunity in history? Well, Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs say this is the time to buy gold. Patriot Gold Group, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may qualify for no fee for life IRA. Call 800-356-4470 for details. Patriot Gold Group, Consumer Affairs top rated gold IRA dealer, 5 years running. Call 800-356-4470 today. Talking with Ken Timmerman, I've got a quote. This is just too good. Just too good. The New York Times actually identified me as an arms dealer. That's sort of funny. It was after I got out of Beirut, started returning to the Middle East. The bug bit me. I went to Egypt. I went to Israel. I went to brunch on different places, back to Lebanon, then to Paris, became friends with a guy named Mark Broman, Colonel Mark Broman, who's head of the Pentagon Office of Defense Cooperation. Big job in Paris at the U.S. Embassy, which was basically in charge of U.S. arms sales to France. Broman is going to retire. Partner was a character named Paul Cutter, former CIA operative, spent a lot of time behind the Iron Curtain clandestinely in the 60s and 70s. He was Serbian by origin and quite a character. Well, you eventually went to Egypt. You knew people there. You said, hey, we want to buy those used F-4s from Egypt. You know Egypt. You've been to Egypt a number of times. You've dealt with them. And so you brokered a deal and for Paraguay. And you said, you know, this was equal to like half of the budget of Paraguay. And they had no military to speak of. They had just a bunch of little single-engine paddle planes. $132 million deal. And you found out it actually was for Iran. Wow, that was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was an eye-opener. It was not what I had expected, and it was not what I had signed on for.
Not what you signed up for, no, sir.
No, and once I realized it was for Iran, I backpedaled very, very quickly, began preserving documents to make sure if anything went wrong, I would have a documentary trail of the entire deal. And ultimately, I went to CBS 60 Minutes, and we were going to do a show on this.
That was with Mike Wallace, right?
No, this was actually with Bob Simon at the time. Later on, I did other shows with Mike Wallace, but this was with Bob Simon, who was a great correspondent. Actually, he died in Iraq during the first Gulf War, but he was an amazing correspondent. And so our plan was to get some of these arms dealers to do clandestine video footage of them. That didn't pan out. That story never aired. But later, I got hired by the New York Times with the same information, which I had now turned into a book called Fanning the Flames, Guns, Greed, and Geopolitics in the Gulf War. This was in 1987, right? Just as Iran-Contra was breaking. And so the New York Times hired me to do all this. I told them about the Paraguay incident and showed them all the documents and the rest. And again, just before they published their front page story, they say they had acquired some other document that showed that I was still part of the Iran deal with this. And they said, you know, we have understood that Mr. Timmerman, who helped research this story, was actually a player in this deal. But we have re-interviewed all of his sources and found everything he has told us has been 100% accurate. So I go to the guy who was selling my book at this point. He worked for the New York Times, their syndication sales. I said, Paul, his name was Paul Genneman. I said, Paul, the New York Times has just, I called me an arms dealer. And he said, so what's your problem? Did they spell your name right? I said, yeah, they spelled my name right. He said, well, that's free publicity. I said, okay.
You didn't need publicity as an arms dealer.
It was kind of funny. But, you know, that was his response to it. And I never actually had flack about that ever again. And certainly the Iranians knew very, very well that I was exposing their arms deals. I was not part of their arms deals. But that did not stop some reporters in France, some evil-intentioned reporters in France, from repeating the slander that I was somehow involved in selling weapons to Iran. So it's ironic in the end, because as you mentioned in your intro, I later formed the Foundation for Democracy in Iran, Iran.org.
Right.
I have worked with countless different opposition groups in Iran to overthrow the regime and the mullahs. The second volume of this memoir is called The Iran House, and it's about those attempts working with Israeli intelligence to overthrow the Iranian regime.
Under President Trump, we were very close to overthrowing them because they were broke because of all the sanctions. Right. We'll be right back.
They were.
Tim Timmerman. The Biden administration is quickly moving to implement the liberal fantasy of socialist spending. After spending a $2.1 trillion stimulus, the president and Democratic-led Congress have introduced another $3 trillion plan to add to our insurmountable debt, seeking to raise taxes on Americans making as little as $200,000 a year. Have you seen the immigration footage? 87 million putting illegals in hotel rooms and our troops sleeping on parking garage floors. Could this be the biggest single gold-buying opportunity in history? Well, Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs say this is the time to buy gold. Patriot Gold Group, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may qualify for a no-fee-for-life IRA. Call 800-356-4470 for details. Patriot Gold Group, Consumer Affairs' top-rated gold IRA dealer, 5 years running. Call 800-356-4470 today. I think one of the most interesting was your biggest market. The biggest market apparently was Iraq, because they were buying 80% of the Aerosporte missiles from France to Saddam. Iraq was buying all sorts of things, Soviet missiles. They're mounting them on French jets. And I'll tell you why that was a big deal, huge deal, because basically it gave the Soviets, at the height of the Cold War now, access to some of our most secret targeting mechanisms. Under the wing of these French jets was the targeting pod, the later laser designation pod. The French says made by Thompson CSF. They said, oh yes, Thompson sold this. No, it came from Martin Marietta in the U.S. That gave them our secret targeting mechanisms that the Soviets had. We're not good at keeping secrets, are we?
Well, we're not often, but this was not the U.S. fault. It was not the fault of Martin Marietta. This was the French. Let me just backtrack a little bit and fill in how we got there. I spent many years in Baghdad before the first Gulf War, talking to French arms dealers, talking to Iraqi officials. At one point, I was blacklisted by Saddam, but then he let me come back in and introduced me to the heads of the ballistic missile program there, the head of their chemical weapons program, the head of their uranium enrichment programs. I was the first journalist to actually interview these people, to meet them face to face, and the pictures of them in my book, and the rest is history. So in 89, Saddam had an arms fair where he was showing off all of his equipment, the stuff that he bought from France and everywhere else. And that's where I saw this targeting pod with a Soviet missile sitting beneath an Iraqi Mirage F1. That's a French
built. You looked at that and you said, that's not the right thing to be under that wing, right?
No, that's absolutely right. And it turns out, and I didn't know it at the time. I believed what Thompson was saying. They said, oh, this is our targeting pod, our laser designation pod. It was not at all. It was something that had been imported to France under a very, very specific license, never to be re-exported. The French violated that license. And ultimately, I exposed it by taking photographs and publishing them in a newsletter that I had at that point. It was picked up by the Pentagon. The Pentagon blocked the French from buying a U.S. missile company. And the French, after that, were trying to get rid of me any way they could. They tried to PNG me, to declare me persona non grata from France because I scotched a $500 million deal they were trying to do here in the U.S. because they had violated our export controls.
1985, you're in South Africa. Canadian Gerald Bull, he was getting for Saddam again, a long-range artillery. 155-millimeter gun. That's huge. That's incredible, isn't it?
Those are the big howitzers. We have those still today. And by the way, we're sending them to Ukraine. We're sending them to Taiwan and other places. But at that time, Gerald Bull had invented a new form of artillery munition that had greater range than anything else. It was very important, and the Iraqis were looking for that. At the time, I was going all over the world investigating arms sales for Iraq. That was kind of my beat. The Iraqis were not that displeased about it because I think they saw this was if not a deterrent to the Iranians, at least it showed the Iranians that the Iraqis were powerful. So the Iraqis did not get in my way. The Iranians weren't very happy, but the Iraqis did not get in my way. So I went to South Africa and talked to the head of their Arms Corps, the Armaments Corporation of South Africa, after I had been spending, I'd spent 3 weeks going around to different production plants. I had fired one of their 155 millimeter howitzers in Namibia. I mean, that was quite an experience. I tell that in the book as well. Not quite sure where we were or how many Cubans were on the other end of that that volley from the from those South African guns. But anyway, he confirmed to me, the head of Arms Corps confirmed to me that they were selling these guns to Iraq. And a year, two, 3 years after that, I was in Iraq when I saw them on the battlefield being used in the final, one of the final big battles of the war on the Fal Peninsula. So I, you know, I'm a journalist of the old school. I keep notes. I keep track of things. I compare notes. I will go from one country, having talked to one person, then go to another country where I can corroborate what this person told me or find the facts on the ground. So that's the way that I operated as a reporter, as an investigative reporter for years and years. And there's very little of that any longer, I'm afraid.
No, practically none. You found out you're dealing with arms sales, and I got interested in technology that you need to manufacture arms. It turned out we in the West, not just U.S., Britain, and in particular France, Germany, Italy, were selling Saddam dual-use technology for his factories, helping him build factories to make chemical weapons, biological weapons, ballistic missiles, cyclotrons, enriched uranium, whole panoply of conventional weapons. But at the same time, they got hold of gas, which they was dual use. They used it to gas 100,000 Kurds, thanks to Donald Rumsfeld. Now, for that also took you into the Simon Wiesenthal Center. They were checking with the connection between Iran, Germany, etc., and the poison gas, right?
Right. And I was one of the first reporters. In fact, I think I probably was the first reporter who drew the connection between dual use exports and armaments manufacturing. And I came to the conclusion very quickly as I looked at Saddam Hussein in particular, but also the South Africans, that once you export the capability to manufacture weapons, you can no longer control those weapons. So we could say, well, we sell arms to the Shah. We sell F-4s and F-14s to the Shah. But once we cut off the supply of spare parts, those aircraft were grounded. Well, they were grounded just as long as the Iranians could not make the spare parts. By the way, they never could. The Iranians were never smart in the way the Iraqis were in the beginning. They've gotten smart now. But in the beginning, they were not. And they did not learn how to manufacture the parts themselves. Saddam learned how to make his own weapons. He imported the technology, the machine tools, the controllers, the computers, everything that he needed, the training of his people. They trained a lot of them in France, by the way, and I went to that training facility. So he learned to get around any kind of arms embargo and to basically purchase his independence. Very smart, very effective.
Wow. Now, you say Papa Bush opened up the weapons gates. And not only did he open up the weapons gates, they used to call him Poppy Bush because of the war in Afghanistan and the opium and all of that. It all was tied up together. But BASL, Bank of Nazionale del Lavoro, Italy, apparently that's where they did a lot of money laundering and stuff, wasn't it? Ran a lot of stuff through there.
Right, the BNL Bank, the Banco Nazionale del Lavoro. And they had a subsidiary in Atlanta, Georgia, the B&L Bank in Atlanta. And they were the ones who were running all of these dual technology exports. And that's the floodgates that Papa Bush opened up. He was going to open up commodity credits from the Department of Agriculture and also billions of dollars to help Saddam Hussein after he had defeated Khomeini to build up his weapons industry. Now, I thought that was a particularly evil thing at the time, and I investigated it. I wrote lots of stories about it. I testified before Congress. I thought my investigations were not political. I had applied what I thought was a pretty objective standard that the United States had gone from blocking dangerous exports to Saddam to enabling dangerous exports to Saddam. And I thought that was a pretty dangerous thing. Later on, of course, I learned it was all about politics. And one of the reasons that Mike Wallace and the New York Times and the rest of them loved me was because I was saying bad things about a Republican president. That's not how it began, and that was certainly not how I saw it, but that's how the media at the time saw it. That was the beginning of this media metamorphosis into the communications directorate of the DNC.
1994 death lobby, how the West armed Iraq. It became a Bible for UN inspections. This was very interesting. The info you got from the French, how to take out radar and all of that in Iraq, stopped the early warning and probably saved a lot of U.S. lives when you got that information about how to take out the radar, because it stopped their early warning. So we just basically had marched right into Iraq with all that information. You were instrumental in doing that, weren't you, Ken?
I was contacted by the U.S. Air Attaché in Paris because they subscribed to my newsletter where I was writing about French arms sales to Saddam Hussein before the war began. So this was, you know, in late 1990, early 1991. The war began in March of 1991. And they said, we've got a problem. I said, okay. And he said, yeah, the French are not giving us any information. They are our allies. They have said that they're our allies in this war against Saddam, but they're not giving us any information about the radar that they have sold to Saddam. Can you find something out? And I said, well, look, I certainly cannot commit espionage, but what I can do is talk to French sources at these companies who I know are pro-American and see what they are willing to tell me, and I will publish it in my newsletter. And, oh, by the way, if they give me documents or anything else, I'll hand them over to you as well. So we got the information that they needed so we could fly Apache helicopters, nap of the earth, which means 50 feet across above ground, and take out the radar systems built by the French, in particular the Soviets also, before our planes, our F-14s or F-15s or F-16s and the rest would be flying over on bombing runs. So that way we did not lose all the aircraft. We were expecting in the beginning, the United States was expecting before this to lose perhaps hundreds of aircraft. And we only lost a couple as a result.
Amazing. You were at the center of this. That's what's also so amazing. If it wasn't for an angel, if it wasn't for Jesus' protection, you never would have made it through this, because you were in some very dangerous spots, weren't you?
That's true. And, you know, sometimes I do these interviews and I want to, you know, start off and say, thank you, Lord Jesus, for keeping me in times of utmost peril, for guarding me and saving me in times of utmost peril, sometimes without even knowing the kind of peril I was in. And there are a couple stories like that that I tell in this book. And the rest is history.
We all need prayer right now, especially as what's happening with Iran and everything else around the world. And the rest is history is an amazing book. Absolutely amazing. I'm surprised you lived through all this. There were so many points that you could have died, so many things that could have happened, and so many places where you were at the very center of history. You changed history. You're aware of that, aren't you? You did change history.
Well, I guess I don't think of it quite in those terms, but you maybe.
Well,
right.
Think about the invasion of Iraq without the information.
Right.
You changed history there. Think about some of the arms deals that you were involved with where you changed history there. But we've got a situation now in Iran, which you've been warning about. You were the first one to give warnings about the improved cyclotrons. You were the first one who came out with the information that the uranium that the Russians bought went straight to Iran, a lot of that, when Mrs. Clinton sold off a lot of our uranium, 25% of our stockpile, I think. A lot of that went straight to Iran vis-a-vis Russia. So we've got a real situation now with Russia that's on the precipice of having a bomb, and they have the bomb. They may not have delivery. They've got cyclotrons that are so much faster, so much better. They've got heavier and water plants. We should knock them out. That's what you're kind of recommending, is that we take them out right now while we can, and the time is getting short. Am I right on that, or am I wrong?
Well, you know, for years, Erskine, I've said that with the Iranians, we should not launch a military strike on them because we have other options to exhaust first. Today, I think we've exhausted just about all of those non-kinetic options. We used Stuxnet, a very sophisticated computer virus, to shut down their centrifuge enrichment program at one point, but they built it back up. And the Israelis have conducted targeted assassinations. They got the head of the nuclear weapons program 2 or 3 years ago. They've gotten other nuclear engineers, but the Iranians are replacing them. And I think
they bombed their site a couple of times, but they've rebuilt that.
Bombed, but not with the Air Force. It was some kind of local explosion that was caused there. That's correct. In 2020, in one of the enrichment plants, and it did a lot of damage. And the Iranians are still feeling the impact of that damage today. But it will not be the United States, certainly not under Joe Obama, who's going to attack or take out the Iranian nuclear sites. It will be the Israelis. And the Israelis are warning us. They are saying this publicly now. They have exhausted their options. And if they see the Iranians cross their red line, now, we don't know exactly what is the Israeli red line, but it is not so close that they put a nuclear warhead on a missile. It is way before that. When they see the Iranians cross that red line, they're going to act, and they're going to act decisively. And my fear is that the Biden administration takes action against Israel, not against Iran, but against Israel. That is my biggest
fear. I think that's altogether possible. Whereas under the Trump administration, they moved the embassy. They also put together, and I think one of the best things that the Trump administration did was put together the Abraham Accords, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's what they did. And when they put that together, we'll talk more about Iran and what's going on right now with Ken Timmerman. But get a copy of this book. You won't put it down. And the rest is history. Incredible. The Biden administration is quickly moving to implement the liberal fantasy of socialist spending. After spending a $2.1 trillion stimulus, the president and Democratic-led Congress have introduced another $3 trillion plan to add to our insurmountable debt, seeking to raise taxes on Americans making as little as $200,000 a year. Have you seen the immigration footage? 87 million putting illegals in hotel rooms and our troops sleeping on parking garage floors. Could this be the biggest single gold buying opportunity in history? Well, Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs say this is the time to buy gold. Patriot Gold Group, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may qualify for no fee for life IRA. Call 800-356-4470 for details. Patriot Gold Group, Consumer Affairs top rated gold IRA dealer, 5 years running. Call 800-356-4470 today. Yes, the raid on Mar-a-Lago was bad. Yes, the situation with the abortion issue is bad. But the situation with Iran is worse. We've got other situations that are worse around the world. We've got situations on international diplomacy. What happened in Afghanistan is beyond bad. It showed the weakness of the United States. The situation of selling out to China is really bad. It's a bad situation, terrible situation. And what's happening in this country, lack of moral values, lack of laws and all that, and the open borders and all that, that is beyond bad. So we've got lots of things to look at, and we're being distracted by the media. And Ken knows that better than anybody. Now, when it comes to Iran, you know more about Iran than anyone. When you're looking at it, I think you'll have to agree that Abraham Accords was one of the best things that happened in the Middle East for world peace, wasn't it?
I think it was, Erskine, and it's something I've written about at kentimmerman.com, and it's something I feel very strongly about. I know some of the leaders in those countries, and this was spearheaded, of course, by President Trump. He passed the ball to Jared Kushner.
Did a great job with it. Yes,
he really did, and it was part of a comprehensive strategy to integrate Israel as America's strategic partner into the region. And so, not only did we move the embassy to Jerusalem, which, by the way, Congress has told every president since Bill Clinton to do, but none of them have done it, including George W. Bush.
Right.
Donald Trump was the one who actually did it. That was part of the plan. And then this, the Abraham Accords, were the second part of the plan, or the second shoe to drop, if you wish, where he integrated Israel, helped them to form alliances, peace agreements, and then economic alliances with the United Arab Emirates, with Bahrain, and Morocco, and other countries in the region. And now Saudi Arabia is on the cusp of doing the same thing. They might not do it quite so openly as the others, but we just had a week ago, 10 days ago, I think it was, the first Israeli commercial airliner overfly Saudi territory on a flight to Qatar. And that was the you know, it was a huge event. For the Saudis, it was a big event. For the Israelis, it was a big event. You have open meetings now between Israeli and Saudi officials, something that was absolutely unthinkable just a couple of years ago. And for all this, we have to thank Donald Trump.
Well, Jared Kushner said that what broke it open was an alliance with the United Arab Emirates. That was what broke it open. And then Egypt came along and others came along. And, the fact that you've got Shiite and you've got Sunni, the difference is even Saudis don't get along with the Iranians. Very few people in that area get along with them. Not easy people to get along with, apparently. But we had them with where the people were ready for an uprising. They were ready to uprise against them at one point. And then we let we let them get away. I mean, this was incredible what happened. That should never have happened, should it?
Well, to be fair, it is a complex situation. The protests against the regime in Iran intensified starting not long after Donald Trump took office in 2017. And you had outbreaks that year. You had outbreaks in 2019. You had more outbreaks in 2020. And the regime in Tehran understood it could no longer just put these down or wait them out, let them, burn themselves out. They had to actually use deadly force to put them down. And so you've now had hundreds, if not thousands, of people murdered by the regime during these protests as the regime increases the oppression. What has happened as a result of that internationally? Absolutely nothing. The Europeans
you had the Foundation for Democracy in Iran, and the Iranians had a quasi-democracy at one point before the Ayatollahs took over, and they had freedom. Women had freedom. It was one of the most progressive countries in the Middle East.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a democracy or quasi-democracy. It was under the Shah, but nevertheless, they had a parliament. It was not very effective, but you're right. Women had rights. Women were part of government. They were running government agencies. I have a friend who was the director of customs at that time, a female who now lives in the state of Maryland as an exile. So women did play important roles, and the country was modernizing and turning towards the West. And that angered the Ayatollahs, who wanted to keep their grip on power.
Ken Timmerman, thank you. KenTimmerman.com, the book, and the rest is history. You need that book. It's fabulous. A great readout, fun read.
All aboard the Truth Express. You can listen on your favorite podcast app or local radio station.
Patriot Gold Group, consumer affairs operated 5 years running, where your IRA or 401k, call 800-356-4470 today.
Switching and saving with GEICO is easy, so you're freed to ponder life's big questions, like is the word dictionary in the dictionary? If so, it probably says something like dictionary, noun. A dictionary is the word you are reading now on the pages they were printed on. Basically, this thing you are looking at right now that you're holding, reading words from, it's a dictionary. As in, hey, look at me. I'm holding a dictionary in my hands as I read the definition of dictionary. Yeah, it's probably something like that. Switch and save with GEICO. It's easier than you think.
Message.
What up, what up? It's Heather's cousin. You dated her in college, or maybe you were just in the same class. Anyway, I heard you bought a boat, my man. Let's hit the water. Oh, and Heather told me you always liked snacks and stuff, so I could totally bring some chips.
When you get a boat, you also get new friends. Make sure Progressive's one of them, and get coverage today for as little as $100 a year.
Hey, all Also, I'm a little short on cash, so can you cover the chips? Thanks. I can see why Heather liked you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Annual premium for basic liability policy not available in all states.